Suncast is proudly supported by Trina Solar.
Hey there, Solar Warriors. I'm Nico Johnson, and this is Suncast. Each week, I pull back the veil on the life and business insights of clean tech entrepreneurs building the most noble and impactful companies of our time. I hope what you learn from this conversation is a catalyst for your own growth. So thanks for tuning in, and welcome to our tribe. Today's entrepreneur, executive, whatever you want to call him, he's been all of the above for quite some time. In fact, for those of you OGs that want to go all the way back to the aughts with me, in the 2000s, there was really only one choice not OEM related if you wanted to monitor what was coming off of your solar array. And that company was called Fat Spaniel, named for the dog of the founder. And all of us used Fat Spaniel at some point or the other. Well, my first interaction with that company was through the voice of the gentleman that's joining us today, Lee Zanone. And he has had quite a career in the industry, most recently serving as the Senior Director of Ops and Asset Management for Avantis, formerly 8 Minute Energy, where he was a team member for the better part of 6.5, almost 7 years, and has seen gigawatts deployed in that tenure. He's also had just a tremendous opportunity to see how the industry has evolved, notably how it has evolved to incorporate or not this concept of PV plus battery storage. Is it really the panacea that we all believe it is? Oh, once we can attach batteries, then our renewable problems are solved. Lee would have you believe that it's not so simple. We're going to dig into why today. If you love these kinds of conversations, and I hope you do, well, you're in the right place. Please subscribe to the show. We've got more than 650 such conversations with executives like Lee on the front lines of the clean energy transition. I hope you'll dig into that back catalog. You could subscribe and check it out at mysuncast.com or whatever player you're using right now, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. But for now, let's dig in. Tune up your skills, Solar Warrior, as we tune into another powerful conversation here on Suncast. In an industry that we call the solar coaster, where most people's tenure in a company is 2 years, I'm impressed that you've spent more than two at several companies in the industry. How'd you do it?
Grit and determination. And I've always sort of been on the cutting edge of
what's the problem next, right? Starting in software, right? And I've never really worked for a company that's specialized in, you know, supply, module supply, banking, et cetera, right? And when you're in asset management, I joke with when I hire asset managers, you have to read 4,000 pages of contracts on land and supply and technology and finance and et cetera, right? So, you know, the backside of our industry is broad, and software is broad as well, sort of starting providing that information to owners way back in the day, doing diligence, and then sort of managing that for Avantis, you know, developing projects that can get financed, can get owned, and that you can deliver the promises of everyone who supplies into that project.
Well put. So we'll dig into one of your pet peeves, as it were, today around the hybrid of PV plus battery energy storage. Before we do that, I'd like to hear your perspective. I don't know if I asked you this question, but if you look over the arc of almost 20 years in the industry, what would you say were the core elements or building blocks for you that became a career, maybe unwittingly, maybe it was intentional, but give you a moment to just reflect on that from Fat Spaniel forward to Avantis and now, you know, doing hyper specific consulting in the industry on integration and sort of buildability. what were the core building blocks?
Well, you know, I start with breadth, right? Like my educational background was like business engineering and political science. And that's why I got into solar, right? It's a regulated industry. It's new technology. It's entrepreneurial. And it also has, you know, the projects we build now are $500 million, right? Sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the breadth. And then being at, you know, in the software side, you see it after the fact. You see everyone's efforts and deliverability, and you have to read it. You see what works, what doesn't work, right? And you have to deal with what doesn't work anyway, right? warranty term missed here, or schedule thing missed here, or financial assumption that can't be delivered here, you know, contract agreements where you just have competing interests, and then how do you sort of mediate and mitigate between owners? You know, one of the things I joked about is like in the early stages when I was at Fat Spaniel, you'd have these developers just fly by night, and then all of a sudden I'd have like the owner of a dairy or like, you know, a winery in Napa just have this thing. They have the software and they're like, what? I don't understand this. Like, I didn't build it, you know? And so in the beginning time, it's just like teaching them like, oh, here's what it means from the revenue side. Here's what it means from the technology side, Sunlight. So it's like breadth of legal, commercial, financial, engineering, and deliverability, right? And that just sort of increased at Medio Control. Then it was like, not only were we doing software, but we were doing independent engineering. You know, we're doing quality assurance testing, you know, moving into the supply chain. And then at 8 Minute Avantis, you know, as a developer, you have to pull in all of these pieces, right? You have to pull in the land, you have to pull in the permitting, all the supply chain, all of the construction, EPC, testing, commissioning, O&M companies, asset management, software, taxes, everything. And as an asset manager, you just get all of that.
When you got to Medio Control, having been at Fat Spaniel and ABB, you know, you spent almost 6 years there, became director of products for North America. What would you say that your peers at Medio Control would have said about you? Like, oh, Lee's the go-to for X. Like, this is his bailiwick.
Well, Medio Control comes out of Germany, and Germany has, you know, slightly different regulations. They've always sort of been ahead in integration, right? Like Medio Control had a residential power control system, right? Not just a monitoring system, but could actually dispatch residential and commercial. And so with them, you know, their engineering and their insight of like the German market just being advanced of ours at the time, what I was there is just like, how does the market work, right? Like what does an ISO need? Like different utilities, how do they need? Like how do, you know, because we were in the residential sector, you know, what are the financial goals of our customers, right? So it moved from electrons to dollars, right? And Germany has it a little different in their euros, and how they structure their financial products is a little bit different than the United States does. So and it was really just taking the technology underpinning is the same. Solar system in Germany, solar system in the United States is the same. But the regulatory and financial structures on top of that are very different. And so it was translating that for them.
So the way I was thinking about that as you were speaking about it is kind of, what did Medio Control most value about you? I think you answered that really well. But if you think now about Avantis, what did the 8 Minute team recruit you away to do? Like what did they value? And then how did you grow that skill set when you were over at Avantis?
Yeah, so Avantis for 8 Minute when I started, they were pure play developers, right? They were sort of out of the project at FNTP, right?
Yep.
And
financial notice to proceed for those who don't know.
and that's oftentimes a transference of a developer owned product to an IPP, right? And there's many developers that are both, and some that are just on one side of the fence or the other. There was like two things. One, they were considering actually owning their own projects, right? And so building the operations and asset management platforms to do that effectively. And then two is you could kind of turn like consider me internal quality control, right? You have IEs, you have diligence from your tax equity and debt partners, and just having, you know, when I was at Fat Spaniel, I saw thousands of projects being operated. When I was at Medio Control, I saw hundreds, right? I've seen what is assumed in contracts and financial models that isn't real, right? On hundreds of projects at from 2 kilowatts to 200 megawatts. And so like making sure that as Avantis was developing their own EPC contracts, supply warranties, O&M contracts, software products, control, SCADA, CAISO interfaces, that the engineering department making these assumptions, the IEs that are sort of working with them and auditing them, that they weren't missing something, right? It's just being like, you know, what you don't know, you don't know. Like that was sort of my role, just say, You'd much rather talk to me internally and say, hey, like, these are the three things that as soon as we put this in front of tax equity, they're going to ask a question and it doesn't exist. It's going to be a problem. So let's forecast what those questions will be and make sure we have an answer to go. And then in parallel, like, you know, just actually just building if we owned, you know, if we were actually the equity owner and sort of skiing down the slope of when you build these large scale utility projects, who has consent and who gets to make decisions about when things work well and when things have problems as it's a one-off negotiation most of the time. So, you know, what is that impact to actual deliverability of the guarantees the project sponsor is making to its financial partners? Is that feasible, right? And I think that that's one thing in a solar-only PPA, and it's a different thing in a hybrid project.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect segue as well. And what I took from what you just said is, you know, if you do own it, and we did an episode with our friends from Encore Renewable Energy, Blake Sturkey, was a fantastic episode that folks should listen to if they're curious at all about how these things, the businesses of developing solar get financed. But he talked about how they're a great example of companies moving from pure play development into becoming an IPP because the economics and the business model need to evolve, or rather the business model has to evolve because the economics have changed. And if you do begin to own it, then you have to ask yourself, how do I get Ali as an owner on my team? Because I want to know what systems need to be in place to manage the impact of the delivered energy written on this paper that we're supposed to be delivering. So I'll pause there and sort of back into what is our typical sort of start point or interview flow, if you will. And that is, how would you describe, having stepped away now from Avantis, because you want to take the leverage, the information that you've been able to garner and make a bigger impact than just for one company. How do you describe to your friends as you've been going around speaking on lots of stages in the last 6 to 8 months as an energy expert, the problem that you identified that you're now trying to solve?
Most of the industry in all sectors, but in
utility scale, you know, for a decade, we built solar only fixed price PPAs with utilities. And the variance in from, you know, sort of modeling that in the beginning to actual deliverability has narrowed, right? And sort of supply chain pricing, you know, in the supply side construction schedule, like that's standardized. The industry has a lot of expertise and history of doing that. And then once it goes into COD, you know, your variances against your monthly revenue are really changes in sunlight from your sort of sunlight model and availability of your products, some soiling, right? But it's a fairly, on an annual basis or a 2-year basis, the range of revenue variability is pretty small, you know, a couple of percent from whatever you modeled, because you just don't have that many independent variables and you don't really have that many levers to move it, right? Like most of the time, it's if you're sunny, it's making money. You're generating as much as you possibly can from the sunlight, and maybe you get curtailed here and there. And your price for every electron is at the most basic level a cent per kilowatt hour, you know, $1 per megawatt hour. And you know, maybe in a complicated, it's like, oh, it's in the summer, it's one thing, and in the winter, it's another thing, right? It's just, but it just has like 4 or 5 categories. And when you create a hybrid project with wholesale exposure, whether it's a, you know, you might have a percentage of PPA or it's entirely wholesale traded, now you still have all those things I described in solar, but now you're exposed to the wholesale pricing and every other power plant on the grid, the change in weather, you know, affecting your generation capacity, affecting all the other solar generation capacities, like projects I have in Kern, you know, there's like 3 gigawatts, right? And so clouds coming over affects all of us, but they're owned by all different people. And then you also have this opportunity where you have this reserve capacity, right? And so you can sort of forecast what the price is, forecast what your generation is, and then move the time when that actually hits the grid and when it's actually sold, you know, some percentage. And so that just adds like a lot of more complexity and variability. And then of course you're adding all the battery functions of how available is it? What is it, its capacity? And so that is both an opportunity, right? Price arbitrage versus a fixed price you negotiated 3 years ago, right? Like what if all of a sudden natural gas goes to $600, right? Like now all of a sudden the grid has to deal with that. So there's opportunity there. You would just have this opportunity to arbitrage your generation out of just, as soon as it's generated, sell it into time of day, you know, night, et cetera. Like, and so you're bringing in market price trading into this, and then you have to make dispatch decisions around that. That's an opportunity on the gross margin of each electron that you sell, right? But it is also a challenge in, it's not just twice as complicated, right? There's like solar complication, battery complication, you put them together. There's like a whole nother layer of them going together that makes it three times or five times more complicated. And the way, when we can walk backwards from this, is that when you run a PV-only PPA and you run an annual or a monthly report, and you're like, we thought we were going to make X number of dollars. We made 95%. Here's the three reasons we were off, right? When you run that for a hybrid project, you thought we were going to make Y number of dollars. Here's 20 reasons why we're off, right? It's not three. And it's on the battery side. It's on the solar side. It's how they talk together. It's how you actually sold it. What is the market, right? You've now brought in five times as many independent variables into the equation.
So let's unpack for folks that are perhaps they don't have the depth and breadth of experience that you do. What do you think, as a, let's speak to our developer friends, what are the assumptions being made right now in the marketplace that are perhaps, if not erroneous, then they are misguided? And if you could enunciate them and then maybe unpack them, that would be good.
The major shift is that as a IPP, historically, when you're managing your O&M company, like you're sort of just like looking at the weather variance, like you have availability of your equipment, you're like managing sort of your warranty terms and replacing, upgrading, and keeping your system as close to 100%. But you're not making any decisions about where those electrons are going. They're going through the meter and you're getting paid for them at the minute that they're generated, right? Like that is how we have owned and operated solar only projects for forever.
Yep. You make one contract up front one time for the most part. Yeah, fixed price.
And so, you know, when we talk about O&M operations and maintenance, in that paradigm, operations is pretty limited, right? It's like you may get curtailed by the utility. You may take down of capacity to do maintenance, but it's really, there's not a lot of operations. In a hybrid project, you are now capital O operating that project, right? You are day by day, you have the ability to determine when your electrons go through the meter, and you can forecast how much they'll cost, right? As we all know, the duck curve, right? If you think of the duck curve from an economic standpoint, when we are at the bottom of the duck, electricity is basically free, right? And then when you're at the top of the duck at 5 p.m., 6 p.m., 7 p.m. in the summer in California, the electricity is 10 times, 20 times more valuable to the utility, right? And like the whole point of batteries is that the solar generates the duck curve across the state, but you can kind of take and keep your energy at the bottom of the duck curve and then sell it when it's much more valuable, right? And so you are, and typically when you build a operating plan around a hybrid project, you kind of create a seasonal metric of how much you're going to charge, when you're going to charge, and how much you're going to discharge, when you're going to charge, around what you think long-term pricing is. But then when you actually own and operate it, that's now a daily conversation. If you're ever in a utility and they're running their own dispatch, like they're looking at their generation and their load profile and moving things around, you know, based on price, based on capacity, et cetera. And now solar IPPs are moving much more into that real-time operations function and having to coordinate with the ISO and the utility that they're connected to in the same function, right? It's a very different active management process of your portfolio than it was when it's just a fixed price PPA.
You outlined something for me that I thought was pretty illuminating that I hadn't really thought through, which had Sean Kelly from Amperon on talking about the value of weather forecasting for utility projects. And it turns out that this transition, as per one of our like sort of industry insider friends, is not one or two pieces of software, it's like five. Could you outline those and why it's like, actually, this is new for everyone and it's complex, and this is why the assumptions being made are potentially erroneous?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, right, weather forecasting, right? When you run a pro forma and you run an 8760 and you're using PVSys, like you're like dailyizing or monthly, like it's just a monthly average, right? And that's not, and that's probably true over 30 years, but you know, I'll just give you an example of your projects in south of Las Vegas in June. There will be 3 or 4 days where thunderstorms run through, right? And that's averaged in your model, but in actuality, it's cloudy, et cetera. You're like 20% below. So having, you know, two intraday, day ahead, 2 or 3 day ahead weather forecasting, that determines your sort of base level of electricity the solar side will be able to generate, mm-hmm. right? Then you have your little part of NVE, Nevada Energy, or, you know, that little part of California for like the CAISO markets, and CAISO handles all of this. That sort of affects what the price settlement trade between supply and load for all of California. CAISO handles that, and you have to forecast what the price variance is going to be in that same time frame as your generation. Then the third thing is that, you know, most large utility scale power plants have some part of their capacity offline on both the solar and the battery side for maintenance, you know, failure, et cetera. And sometimes it's 100, sometimes it's 98%, sometimes it's 95%. So with that, you need to know that information, because what you then do is on your control and dispatch decision making is you have to take all three of those sort of ranges of pricing in real time, and then you have to make an optimal decision of when am I charging and when am I discharging, right? The price can change, your available capacity can change, and your available resource, right? Even if you're at 100%, like those all can change. And so, you know, if I'll give you an example, it's like, all right, I want to sell 100 megawatt hours at 1 o'clock tomorrow in the CAISO. But I have two of my inverters down for maintenance, and I only have 90 megawatts of solar, right? If you tell the CAISO that, like, you're inaccurate, right? And there are also penalties around it being inaccurate, because they need to have sort of certainty in what the total energy is available to them. Or, you know, the other example is I want to sell 100 megawatts tomorrow, but there's a thunderstorm coming through, or there's a rain system coming through, and I'm only going to be at 70% of my irradiance that I modeled in my 8760, right? So I don't have that capacity. And then like the third example is like, okay, I have all the solar, it's fine, but one of my medium voltage circuits of my battery is down. So I think I can charge, you know, I think I could charge my entire battery and then sell that electricity at 7 p.m. Well, I actually can't, right? So, and then the mathematics behind all of those actual to modeled is significant, right? And like in the math on that in software, right, where I started in software, and you're just like, you know, your key performance indicators, there's like 4 or 5 on the PV side, there's a little bit more on the battery side because it is controllable, but then when you start putting them together, it's like a factorial, right? It's like, because now you have to take each one of those and the variables in them and then see how they affect the other one and then how they work together, right? So you're taking things that are independent and making them dependent upon one another.
On the software stack, just going through what you just unpacked for the someone who's listening but not actually tying it to a product, price forecasting is a separate piece of software. Weather forecasting is a separate piece of software. SCADA and controls, two separate piece of software. And then availability. And I want you to unpack that one for me. Like, that's a separate piece of software. So that fifth piece, availability, how's that traditionally handled? where does that data come from?
I mean, it does come from your, you know, SCADA stands for system control and data acquisition, right? So you're going to get, in your SCADA system, you're going to get data from the project of your availability, and you're going to have the ability to control what is available you know, we move electrons from sending to the grid to the battery, right? And so it comes there. But what it typically does is it's real time, right? And so the SCADA system will say, I have two inverters down, right? And where you as an asset manager and an operator owner have to go is like, okay, I have two inverters down. Now I have a ticketing system with my maintenance technicians. And they tell me that inverter is going to, one of the inverters is going to be down for 2 days. And one of the inverters is going to be down for a week, right?
So it's really the O&M system, like the actual, like for the ability to forecast the readiness of that system.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
right?
Its real time operability.
Yeah, because you now have this availability and you're forecasting, oh, when is this coming back up, right? And and even in both the old paradigm and the new paradigm, when you work with your O&M companies, either the warranty providers of your inverters, modules, trackers, substations, or the actual technicians, you schedule planned maintenance for an entire year, right? And so then you can work that in as like, okay, I know and typically you do this when electricity is cheap, right? So you're going to do it in the fall or the winter. You know that, but you know, I have a project that has 75 inverters on it, right? Even at like a 1% failure rate per year, that means an inverter's down all the time, right? And sometimes they just line up and you have three or four down, right?
And a full-time crew there that constantly are just scouring the project,
it, right? And so,
yeah,
you know, in the old paradigm, it's like, oh, okay, so it's down for 2 days, but the price hasn't changed. You know, if you're in Southwest, your radiance is fairly stable for most times of the year. It's like pretty easy to just say, oh, this being down in reactive maintenance, the financial impact's X. And so when you run an asset management report, right, to your owners and your tax equity and your debt, you know, the way that works is you sold a project, you developed a project, you projected it's going to make $5 million a month or $5 million in July, right? And then July comes, you run a report and you're like, we made 5.2 if it's, you know, some good things happened, or we made 4.7, right? And then when it's not 5, they want to know, well, why isn't it 5? And when it's just solar, you're like, oh, okay, so I had these inverters down, we didn't project that correctly, or it was way cloudier or rainier than we thought in July for whatever, right? It's like, it's a small list. But now, you know, you add the storage in there, you add the software we talked about where you have price variability in real time. You have everything we just talked about in availability. You have the capability of actually making those charge discharge decisions throughout a day and throughout a week and your forecast accuracy. When you said, oh, I made 4.8 million, the number of variables that could affect that delta goes from like 3 to 5 on a PV only project with a PPA to like 20. Right. And so, and where we are as an industry is quantifying those, running that annual report or monthly report or daily report, and being able to simply translate the software that's helping you make forecasts and real time execution decisions into a look back in a simple form that a hedge fund that you know, doesn't have sort of like all the technical expertise that we're talking about here. And they're just like, all they want to know is like, why didn't I make as much money?
It's probably fair to say that every sector in the U.S. solar industry is anticipating the emergence of truly domestic U.S. module manufacturing capacity over the coming years. But for Trina Solar's customers, that wait is over as the new 5-gigawatt facility in Willmar, Texas, will soon have U.S.-made N-type TOPCon modules rolling off the line, all while supporting 1,500 local jobs. Just another reason Trina Solar is your trusted partner for total solar solutions. Visit mysuncast.com/Trina to learn more about Trina U.S. manufacturing capacity. Hey, pardon the interruption, but I wanted to just let you know how much of an impact you have on Suncast. Yeah, you. Thank you for clicking play. Without you, this show is just me shouting into the void. But there's still people who don't even know about Suncast. I know. I can hardly believe it myself. But that's where you can help me yet again. There's a simple way that you can show some love and help others discover the show. If you cruise over to www.ratethispodcast.com/suncast, I'd love it if you would leave a 5-star rating and enthusiastic review. That's possibly the single kindest thing that you could do for me today. So if the show has helped, inspired, or even entertained you at all, I'd love it if you would head over to ratethispodcast.com/suncast and give me a virtual 2 thumbs up. All right, back to today's episode. Who's building the system that integrates all these data points and models the answers like what you're just describing? Is that always a bespoke thing internally for each company? Is there an external partner? Like, are there multiple software companies building a solution to this?
You know, this is probably what I've been doing for the last year and a half, is it's a little bit of both, right? So when I was actually building this for Advantis, like today, you cannot get everything we just described in a single package. Nope. you talked about clean power research, right? Like, they're great at weather forecasting. They have some of the stuff in pricing. They don't do any system controls and data acquisition. And they have nothing with availability, right? You talk about whether it's in-house with an O&M company or a third-party SCADA supplier, right? They have all the system controls and stuff, but they don't have any of the market pricing, right? And then you have like the market pricing experts that, like you have Ascend, you just have a whole bunch of them that like they're giving you real-time or long-term price forecasting. They're experts in wholesale markets, but they are not experts in solar power plants, right? So they don't have any of the SCADA stuff and they're not really weather. And so, you know, sort of all the leading software suppliers in each of those sort of verticals, I have been having conversations to see, and are you adding other of these verticals into your systems, right? And some are, right? And it's still out there. And so when I was at Advantis, I was like, okay, so I can't get all of this. And then the other thing is that from sort of a range of forecasts and a decision making, like where we were going is you would just have a scheduling and operations desk inside the IPP, because there's I probably have like 25 patentable equations in my head that I was like working on to do, where that help you take each of those data points and have key performance indicators and then make the decision. So for the most part, you're going to have to, for a while, sort of take those all in to actually make the decision of charge 40 megawatts now to discharge 40 megawatts at 7 p.m. Like, you take all those data sets in, you run some mathematics around there, you run some optimization that'll sort of help you try and get the best price per megawatt hour. For the day or tomorrow or 2 days after that. In 6 to 12 to 24 months, I'd probably say 12 to 24, you may be able to get a software platform that does a lot of this for you. And so then the other thing is just on the schedule of these projects that may work, because you know, most of the pipeline, most of the capacity of hybrid projects are still in procurement, contracting, financing, right? They're not totally getting built. Like, they're definitely not near COD, right? This is one of the silver linings of schedule delays with module tariffs, is like, now there's a little bit time for the executors of hybrid projects to build their software and decision-making platforms if their CODs got moved, you know? The problem as a procurer, right, or a designer of an IPP asset management platform, if the software supply chain doesn't have this service, and it kind of takes 12 to 18 months to like put it all in place, right? Like, it's IT systems, it's software systems, it's communicating with ISOs, right? It's creating reports for tax equity partners. You know, it's not all internal consumers. It's a complicated thing, and it takes 12 to 18 months to build it to be ready for COD, right? So if you talk to a software provider, it's like, yeah, I'll have all of these features in 12 to 18 months. You know, you have to be pretty confident that they actually can deliver on what they're promising versus building it yourself, right? And so it's just a And it's just the nature of, you know, just being on the curve of built, right? Like the industry maturity. Like it's a whole new reset.
Lee, I got to imagine, given, you know, there aren't a ton of folks that are working at a Avantis in the role that you have, or at a Silicon Ranch or a Lightsource, right? Like it's a dozen companies at that scale right now in the industry still. Like we aren't talking about like really big scale IPPs that have 3 gigawatts under their belt. By your assessment, having been in the industry for about 20 years, how many people do you feel like have the specialized knowledge that you have that are seeing these issues?
There's probably 20 that have like experience with it. You know, a lot of them are actually on the storage only, right? The wholesale side. And then there's probably another 25 to 50 that are like understand that it is a problem, but just like haven't like had to, like they're just on the backside of it, right? Like, and it's just, and every day it's like another one of these projects starts going into due diligence and more tax equity, more debt is like looked at it. It's started to, you know, every day, you know, some of the developers that were even more advanced than Avantis like have brought stuff into COD. And so then their asset management groups have come in here, right? And so it's growing, but just where we are in the industry, right? Like the vast majority of these utility scale hybrid projects are sort of still in some development financing phase. And they also got delayed a little bit just because the module, module side. Mm-hmm. So,
yep, supply. We didn't even get into supply chain today. Yeah. What are the biggest for you and the other 19 glaring red light flashing flag waving things happening that like maybe tax equity doesn't know about or designers or even developers don't know about that you'd be like, hey, look out.
And I don't even know that it's a problem, right? But it's like when you're now modeling, right? Because like what you do is you basically model, you know, what's the total revenue of the project over 25, 30 years, right? You know, when you did that with a PV-only PPA, sort of like everyone agreed the range of revenue risk in any one year, plus or minus 5%, right? Now that you've taken in all these extra price variables, right? And you have all this more sort of like optimization, deliverability upside, right? Like when ERCOT had their crazy ice storm, right? And prices went through the roof. You wouldn't have modeled that in your storage project. But if you were there to capture it, oh my God, you just made 200% what you thought for the year, right? In like 4 days. The range of reasonableness of the revenues and therefore the, you know, the profit margin is probably plus or minus 15% in a hybrid project. But when you're actually trying to ask for $200 million from a debt provider in tax equity, that's a really hard thing for everyone to agree upon that, the, you know, what that range is. They want it to be narrower. And the negotiations of what if you're on the downside of that 15%, who eats the cost? Is tax, you know, tax equity money has never been at risk, really, in a PV-only PPA. It could be in this type of project. Are they willing to do that? That's sort of open on their side. And if they're not willing, can they fund it? And if they do, how do you actually build like the guarantor terms between the equity sponsor and them? And so that sort of conversation of just there's more variables and the actual bottom line impact of the forecasts is where we're at now. Then if we can get through this hurdle, wherever that comes out, then when you're on the deliverability side, right, you have some conservative or aggressive sort of profit assumptions of all these independent variables. Delivering to conservative or aggressive is a challenge. And then understanding those variables in real time is a challenge. And then reporting on their impact, you know, from a megawatt hour, but more importantly, a gross profit dollar per month, per quarter, per year, that report is 10 times more complicated than a PV-only PPA. And so when, you know, what do they not know is like they, tax equity developers, IPPs, debt, they're used to getting a report. I have a buddy who used to be at Wells Fargo, and he and I talk about this all the time. They're used to getting a report that kind of tells them how their portfolio is doing. That's like interpretable, right? Now they're going to get a much more complicated report, right? And it's going to have much more categories of gains and losses. And the range of gains and losses from the bottom line model is much higher, right? So it's just a more risky investment, but it's also has a much higher upside, right? So, you know, and you may have heard this before, right? Like utility scale PV, PPA is like, they're pretty much like an annuity, right? Like they don't have a super great return, but they're pretty much guaranteed for 20 years, right? This is a different investment vehicle, right? It has a higher range of returns, but it has a higher risk. And so just transitioning the entire industry to, it's a different thing, right? From a financial instrument to a power plant, it's just different than what it used to be before.
But when you've got some of the biggest pension funds and endowments investing in these assets, they don't like the fact that it's no longer an annuity.
No. And that's, you know, and even, you know, when you take an IRA, you know, tax transferability, right? Like where I see this going on the Wall Street side is like, you're going to get, your cost of capital is going to be a little bit different. It's a riskier investment. You're going to get completely new players, right? Like you'll get hedge funds and you'll get different investment banks that are willing to take on a little bit more risk. And that's, and the other thing is just like for the last year, and a lot of your people talk about this, right? Like we have all the tariff sort of uncertainty. We have the IRA completely sort of changing the game of what finance can do on transferability from the ITC we've had forever. And then we have this completely baseline revenue of a power plant and profitability of that power plant change from solar only fixed price PPA to solar plus storage, real time energy arbitrage pricing. All three of these things are happening at the same time. And I would say from my perspective, doing this for almost 20 years is probably the most variable and uncertain time I've ever been in the industry. Even with the growth, right? Because you have like, you know, you have your normal industry development curve where it's like new, everything's kind of changed, static, et cetera. Like you level out. And like solar's there, but now batteries are still in that industry curve. And then the financial instruments, both on the financing and on the revenue contracting side, are all brand new. So it's the learning curve on like three or four different levels of the industry as a whole. Like we're just on the start of these learning curves.
Yeah. I like to say, folks will say, like, isn't the industry maturing? And I'll say, yeah, in the way someone who just graduated college is maturing. Right? Like you don't know what you don't know about like, courting and getting married and having children.
Yeah.
And like life gets so much more complicated than you thought it ever could. But you're mature now. Like you've got a degree, you're credentialed, you can earn $100,000. Like you thought you were big stuff until like you run into like the real problems of life.
Yeah. Coming back to your question.
Speaking of which, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's like when there are people who are new, even people who have expertise in the industry, it's like, one, your assumptions about individual categories have changed. But two, what you don't know, you don't know, is there is a dozen or two dozen new categories of assumptions that you don't even know exist. That will affect sort of everyone's returns and deliverability on there. And now they're, you know, and the great thing is why we move in this direction as developers is there is upside, right? You know, there is a world where you can, in the right circumstance, on the right project, maybe average $80 a megawatt hour for a power plant, right? Like, like 2012 PPA prices, right? Like you can like get back to some great dollar per megawatt hour, you know, that's like nowhere where PPAs are right now, right? And so there's a huge upside, but there's more complication and there's more risk. And so that's just a different, you know, from Wall Street's perspective of, you know, a power plant just being a financial instrument, right? It's not a bond. It's not a bond with a guaranteed, you know, basically level return. It's much more of a stock. There's a higher upside. There's higher revenue. But it's more risky. And, you know, then the last thing is that, you know, these are $100 million, $200 million. I did a $500 million financing putting that much money on the line, it is that much more complicated. The last thing is schedule, right? Like you could like maybe like finance a project 90 days, whatever, 120 days. I've done some of these projects and it's three times as long just because lawyers don't understand, the buyers don't understand, the buyers' engineering teams don't understand. And so, yeah, it's so then you just got to watch out from that from a developer's. You're like, oh, I have a COD here and I think I'm going to have 90 days of financing diligence, and then it becomes 6 months. You know what I mean? And it's instead of, 80-page IE report, it's a 400-page IE report, stuff like that. Or it's just all of a sudden it's like, well, okay.
While my brain begins to sort of reduce back down to my normal size, can you take a moment and for those who are interested, how would someone get in touch with you? Where do you like to be found?
You can always find me on LinkedIn. I'm LeighZanone. I'm the only person in the world with that name. So if you search my name, I will come up on Google. I have zanonergy.com, ZanonerGy.com, which is my consultancy website. And you can contact there and schedule a meeting. I'll just finish as that. I got into solar for the green energy, right? The climate change, the effectiveness of this. And then I love educating people. I have five kids myself. They know all about solar and stuff. So, if you have questions, you want a deep dive, I thoroughly enjoy when I can get into a deep conversation about this, right? I try to keep it pretty simple for you, but if you're an expert and you want to really go into, you and the audience, if you really want to go into the numbers, you can call me. And if you just really want to just sort of have hey, you said something that seemed complicated, can you simplify it for me? That's good too, yeah.
If you are still tuning in and listening to us, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being a whole episode listener. You probably, like me, are out on a run, or I'm not running right now, I'm washing dishes, or you're doing something that you can't hit stop. So let me make this a little bit more interesting for you. If you are listening to this and didn't watch it, we do have a whole bunch of clips of these interviews over on YouTube. We'll link to that in the description. I hope that you'll check those out. Lee and I both are very active on LinkedIn. I try to respond to every comment. I try to respond to as many DMs as I can. So please reach out and let us know what we could do to make this show even more interesting. If you love this format and you want to see Suncast evolve, I'm all ears. And I want to say, if you are, like me, an infinite learner, well, my fellow PhiloMath, we've got all the show notes and all the research that I do for every episode in the episodes area of my Suncast. .com. If you poke around there, you'll find ways to connect with me directly for advice if you value it. And you can also find our sponsors who help make this show possible each and every week, so that all you got to do is pay your attention, which I agree is as valuable as their money. But I'm grateful for them because they are also bringing cool products to the market. You should go check them out. They help make this show free so that you can tune in each and every week. You can learn how to partner with us just like they do, reach thousands of solar warriors and clean tech champions twice a week at mysuncast.com/sponsor. Remember, you are what you listen to. Thanks again for showing up, Solar Warrior. It's half the battle.